Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. Well, you may think that the day to look at is November 6th, and that's when we'll find out when we who our new legislators are going to be. But have you ever noticed that when you look at those election returns as they come out, that there's actually not a lot of them that we're in any doubt? There's a bunch of unopposed seats. There's a bunch where there's overwhelming victories by one side or the other. The day when most of those races will be decided is actually coming up on Friday, the filing deadline. And the real political insiders will be able to look at the list of candidates and tell you pretty close how things are going to come out in most of those races. So today, we're talking about candidates being recruited, candidates being trained to be candidates, how you could become a candidate, what does it take to run for the legislature in Alaska. I think it's going to be more than just a political junkie conversation, although we'll get the political junkie part done as well. So thanks for being with us. My guest in the studio is Randy Redrick, chairman of the Alaska Republican Party. Welcome, Randy.
It's good to be here.
We have a guest from the Democratic Party who I believe is on his way. I am just for full disclosure, everybody probably knows I'm a Democrat, but I'm here to be disinterested questioner and hopefully we'll be fully even Steven. And we're really not here for a political debate about the policy or which side is better, but sort of how do we get that list of candidates that shows up on the ballot? How do those people end up there? And one might think, well, it's whoever shows up, but actually you've been doing quite a bit of work, I'm sure, Randy, in sort of making sure your party will be well represented.
Candidate recruiting is an absolutely necessary part of being in a position to win. Knowing what a large number of people want to do gives you an opportunity to potentially talk to the person who today believes they want to do the particular thing where you need a candidate. I have frequently suggested to a district chairman that if you don't have 15 people that you think want to run for office in the future, your bench is too thin, because there's opportunities to run for the school board. There's opportunities to run for the assembly, the state legislature, various and sundry other things in the community that are resume builders, experience creators. They increase your wisdom that you may never want to do this again.
Right. So, and we think about the top of the ticket and the senatorial and gubernatorial races, but those folks have all put in their time and learned how to be candidates, learned how to run. They didn't just show up there on day one and run for governor.
Well, or they come from an area like Bill Walker did, of having no prior involvement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to go through 14 steps to get somewhere.
Although he didn't get elected.
That may be true. Ralph Samuels also ran for governor after spending 6 years in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Parnell had spent, I believe it was 10 years in the legislature before leaving the legislature. So not many folks recently have been long-term participants.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Knowles, to be bipartisan about this set of observations, never served in Juneau.
Right. We've had some mayors who have had success. And do you sort of keep a list of all the different House and Senate districts? We've got 59 coming up because of reapportionment. And just thinking about, oh, do we have somebody who will work in that district, and who do we have, and is it that person strong enough? I mean, does it come down to that level of charting it?
To some extent. In some parts of the state, for example, when Anna Fairclough decided to run for the Senate, I was somewhat pleased that only three people came forward to run for her vacant House seat, because there were a number of other folks who have a historic interest and a desire somewhere in their future plan, it says, I want to do this. So having only three people run, which could lead to only two people being disappointed on the morning after the primary,
right,
was, I'd say, almost good news. As we were talking before the show started, in a redistricting process, if you have an open seat, it sort of creates the equivalent of open forest land after a fire. A lot of things sprout and want to be a part of it. And so four, 10 years ago, we had several races where we had more than three candidates. Carl Gatto won a four-way race in the Valley, as an example.
And it only takes the plurality. So if you're in a four-way race, you get 25% plus one, right?
Yeah. And a friend of mine yesterday in the Texas primary proudly finished ninth in his congressional race.
Wow.
Ninth. I think they had 14 candidates.
So that's what you don't want to have as the party chairman.
That's a little too much entertainment, because once you get beyond four or five, there's probably multiple people who have almost identical interest running, and you can wind up with a very peculiar result in terms of who wins.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that is that opens up a whole area of interest for me.
Yeah, the Democrats had a wonderful phenomenon in South Carolina. They really didn't have a strong candidate running against DeMint a couple of years ago. And they had a fellow who had, I don't even know how he got his name on the ballot, win the nomination, then became a fairly visible national candidate who never did spend any money. He was just earned media only.
We had some very unusual candidates run against Senator Stevens for the same phenomenon. I don't want to name any names. Let the listeners know how they can get in on this conversation. To me, as somebody who's interested in politics, it is absolutely delicious to be able to sit down and talk to Randry Riedrich, the chairman of the Republican Party. We have a Democratic representative on their way. The phone number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Any of your questions about what it takes to run, who's running, all of those inside politics questions are on the table. If you're outside of the immediate Anchorage area, there's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Randy, in talking about this candidate recruitment process, you are thinking about winning the legislature. You want to get the majority of seats there. And so obviously you've got a prototype in mind of who you want to win the primary. You may not, as a party, you may not endorse somebody in the primary, but when you're recruiting, you're thinking what sort of person you'd like to see. You obviously have your dream person, not very often, an incumbent or something like that. But if you're looking at an open seat, what sort of person, newbie, are you looking for?
One of the things that I've always used as a simple line to answer that question is the most conservative person that can win that district, which in different parts of the state is a very different candidate.
Mm-hmm.
For someone to win
has an R next to their name.
Who will work for Republican causes, mm-hmm. who will work with a Republican organization, who is the most conservative person that constituency will elect, which in Nikiski and North Pole is very different from downtown Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, your party has a, I don't know if it has a liberal branch, but it has a moderate branch and it has a conservative branch, right? I mean, there's
individuals who have, I kind of view the party as having three major groups of folks. You have social conservatives, fiscal conservatives, and then a group of people that can be best identified as, whether you call them law and order, Second Amendment, veterans, pro-national defense. There's many traits that they have in common, mm-hmm. as a third segment. And obviously, if you're running for a seat near Eileson or Elmendorf, someone who has an interest in the military has a huge advantage over someone who has no involvement in the military, no ability to relate.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if you're in East Anchorage, you may be looking at one version. If you're in West Anchorage, you'd probably be looking at more solid fiscal conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a baseline that you must remember when you're recruiting candidates. Who can relate to these voters?
Now, when you talk about some of the more Democratic-leaning districts in the state, you want to make sure you put somebody up, even though you know they might not have a great chance of winning. Is that part of the...
If there's someone who wants to run, you try to encourage them and assist them to the extent possible, mm-hmm. because it makes the opposition's life more challenging to not have an opportunity to completely...
You want to force the other guy to put some effort into it.
Yeah.
So what's that conversation like when there's someone who's saying, well, I want to run, you know, I think I can beat Les Guerra. I think I can beat Lindsey Holmes.
We have a young man filed against Les.
Okay.
We have a very good candidate filed against Lindsey. Anand Dubey was in the office yesterday afternoon. Anand is running for the West Anchorage District 19 seat. And I think that's going to be a very competitive race. He's one of the most high-tech mm-hmm. individuals I've ever worked with, which means his campaign is going to be truly 21st century. And it's very rewarding to see someone talk very enthusiastically about something he's done, uh-huh. which is truly new, and he is looking at the developing result unfolding much as Jeff Lowenfels would characterize a flower opening to exceed his expectations.
Neat. Well, I want to get into the topic that you may not want to talk about, of the sacrificial lamb, but we'll I want to invite Les Guerra to the show. Les is joining us by telephone. He is a Democrat who represents the downtown areas of Anchorage. Representative Guerra, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Charles. Yeah, thank you for the invite.
So I've been talking with Randy Riedrich, and Les is our representative from the Democratic side of this topic of how do we get the folks who are on the ballot, who recruits them, how do they figure out what they're going to do once they are running. And of course, you are an incumbent, and you are in a district that is politically really well aligned with you. I don't know how reapportionment has affected you, but it seems to me that since your first run, you haven't had a huge challenge, and you've been pretty safe. Is that true?
I think the hugest challenge was my first election when it was two Democrats running against each other, and that was a hard election. But the margins have been good. I really enjoy my district. It hasn't changed very much. I unfortunately lost Rogers Park, which I really enjoyed representing, but I do now have all of downtown and Fairview and Government Hill and Eastridge. So it's a district of people that I know, and that's sort of one of the positives about knocking on doors and getting to meet people.
So tell me, when you first, it's been quite a while now, but you first jumped in the race. You hadn't run for office before, as I recall. What was the process for you of deciding to run and then learning how to run?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting. Nobody knows how to run when they first run. So I think for anybody out there thinking about running, I guess you have until June 1st to call one of the parties if you're thinking about running. Just rest assured that nobody knows how to run their first time. And it's really a matter of knocking on doors, trying to raise money, and having beliefs that fit the values of your district, and not lying about them to get votes, because people figure that out. Well, these people hopefully figure that out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should ever be deterred by the fact that they haven't run before or don't know what they're doing, because I had no idea what I was doing before I ran in terms of how you run for office.
Had you worked on campaigns? Had you worked on campaigns before as like a volunteer or something?
Oh, what I'd done on the campaigns didn't teach me very much, unless putting rubber bands through holes or making phone calls at the last minute to qualify, which they really don't.
I got you. So what was your biggest surprise the first time you ran? What in terms of what this is all about as a candidate?
How much work it was, really. I mean, it's a lot of work. I appreciate Randy's sort of pitch for his candidates, but he's talking about candidates who are running against Democrats who've done a lot of work in their districts, getting to know people. Lindsey Holmes, Hollis French, Bill Wachowski, they know the people in their districts. We all like to pound our chest that our guy is going to beat the other guy, but For those candidates who work hard, I think they have a good chance. For the candidates who rest on their laurels, you know, the incumbents who never got out and meet anybody, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, well, that's and that comes back to this question that I was threatening to talk about just a second ago. I want to get both of you on this one. We'll start with you, Representative Guerra. The sacrificial lamb, each party wants to make sure that all the seats are contested. And yet there are some seats in some districts in Alaska that are so overwhelmingly in favor of one party or the other that the chances of some newcomer to the process knocking off an incumbent are really, really low. Is there a process of talking people into those? And then what kind of support do those folks get from the party? Or, you know, how does that work? Have you been involved in any of those discussions?
Are you talking to me, Charles?
Yeah. I'll give it to you and then over to Randy.
I tend not to really be involved in candidate recruitment, so it's a little bit of a, you know, the party tends to do it. But before I get to the sacrificial lambs, the candidates that do the best are not the ones the party goes out and finds. They're people who've already decided they wanted to run. They're the highly motivated people who've decided they want to run and make a difference. The ones that you sort of have to twist the arm to get to run are ones who tend to be not good candidates because they don't do the work. They've sort of been coerced into it. And your best candidates are the ones who are motivated. And those, even in hard districts, are not sacrificial lambs. You know, in my first election, the first poll I did, I was down 53-7. And I won. I don't sort of buy this idea that there are very few districts. I suppose there are a handful of districts that are pretty close to impossible for somebody from the other party to win. And I've got to say, nothing bad about Randy. When one party is in control of the redistricting process, the Democrats have done it before, and now the Republicans have done it this year, they try and draw maps that create a few districts that are dominated by the other party. They cluster all the other party's voters in a couple districts, and then they create a lot of districts that their party can win. At least that's the science of it. And you know, Mr. Rederich and his party have done that this election, but I still think they're not going to be as successful as they predict. The sacrificial lamb, the ones, there are sacrificial lambs who don't work very hard and they really have no chance. But I don't know that the party, at least the Democratic Party, has a strategy of always putting up a candidate in every district. That's something you'd have to ask Kate Brown about.
Yeah, Randy Rederich, what do you think about that sacrificial lamb question?
Well, I think maybe some of the recent history speaks for itself. As Lest, have you had a Republican opponent in the? How many Republican opponents have you had in the last 10 years?
My first election was against a Democrat. My second election was against a Republican. My third one was against a Democrat who got Republican support. So, very nice guy. All of the folks were very nice, they tended to be positive campaigns.
So there's very little of an indication that there's an active effort to have someone run in an overwhelmingly Democrat district. Now, mm-hmm. We frequently find someone that does want to do that. They live there. They want to do this. At this time in their life, it fits their personal management plan. Mm-hmm. And so you do wind up with people running in places that are very tough. And this may, we've had several people who ran elsewhere later. I had one fellow look at a district here recently and said, if I was younger, I would definitely run for this district that he now happens to be living in. Mm-hmm. Because he says, this looks better than anything I've ever won in the past. So, there are time and circumstance are a mm-hmm. huge portion of it. And as Les says, you have to have a motivated candidate. Mm-hmm. If there's not a desire to win, the chances of winning are very, very slim.
Don't do it unless you're really serious. Yeah.
Well, the worst thing is you might win and then you have to go to Juneau.
That's right.
You have to be committed to this.
Here's a question coming in by email for you, Randy. We'll ask Les as well. What sort of background checks are done on potential candidates?
We generally do some checks to verify, first of all, what their residency is, what their personal involvement with law enforcement authorities have been.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you don't want to be is surprised. And, of course, you try to get candidates to give you some idea who they are, what they are, and why, so that the background checks probably provide nothing that's new. Occasionally, you will have someone who believes they have done something that they're not very proud of, and you go to try to figure out what they're talking about, and you can't find hide nor hair of it, so you have to ask them again, because some people are overwhelmingly concerned about some
minor
encounter mm-hmm. with authorities 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe with the integrated digital age we live in today, no one's past will ever disappear in the future.
It's very, very hard. I mean, a number of years ago, 20 plus years ago, there was a rash of resume scandals where there were some legislators who had their past come back suddenly and inopportunely right before the election, but it's been quite a while since that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm thinking particularly that, was it the Lynn Garrison who had an issue about that? Les, do you have anything to add on that, background checks or finding out who this person is before you support them?
Well, I can tell you sort of a secondhand, because like I tend not to really get involved in the candidate recruitment thing. On one hand, I have had come back to me, people ask me, look, this person isn't true blue progressive on every issue. And I always say, I don't care. My view is the Democratic Party is a big tent. Most of our candidates are pro-choice. Some of them are pro-life. We tend not to all vote the same, you know, which I think we're proud of. In terms of the more personal background check, I honestly don't know whether the party does one. I think they would probably look to see if somebody has a serious criminal history, but I don't know that for sure. But in terms of philosophy, it's hard to say. You can't in one sentence say what either party stands for, but my view of the Democratic Party is it stands for creating opportunity for everybody, regardless of whether you're born with it. That's a broad tent. Does that mean that you're all the same on every social issue, every controversial issue? No. And I always say, look, if somebody wants to sort of help the state, I want them to run. I don't care what, I don't have a litmus test on their views.
All right. Now I want to give out the phone number here. If you have questions for either of our guests, Representative Les Guerra or Republican Party Chairman Randy Riedrich, the phone number is 550-8433 within Anchorage. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. The filing deadline for becoming a candidate for the legislature, 59 out of 60 seats are open and up for election because of redistricting. That filing deadline is Friday. So on Saturday morning, we're going to be able to look in the newspaper, check the internet, and find out, you know, what races are going to be out there and which ones are going to be competitive and which ones are potentially going to change the direction of the state, because the Senate has been basically split and has been in a coalition for some time. And, it's very possible a few seats could change and really change the dynamics in Juneau. Any predictions, Chairman Riedrich, I'm sure you think you're going to win, but I mean, are there any particular seats that you're focusing on in that?
Well, a little bit of this is going to depend on who actually files, because you never know exactly who is going to show up. Promises, commitments are only good when in ink at the Division of Elections.
And you said that not that many names are on the list yet.
Well, I mean, we don't have that many people filed, and 10 years ago, there were 3 or 4 filings the last several days that were a surprise to many. You never know in a redistricting year, someone wakes up one day and says, I'm in a different district. I kind of like to do this, versus having thought about it and decided that don't want to do this, don't want to represent those people, don't want them calling me, whatever the rationale, mm-hmm. because some of them are about that peculiar.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have some more, but I think we will add several senators. We've got some folks running in districts that they should be able to win. Pete Kelly is running in Fairbanks. He was formerly a seated senator, very capable individual, running for his seat that was a double Republican seat. The other guy stayed around for most of the decade, and he is running. Anna Fairclough is running. At the same time, we have several exciting primaries. Republicans always have exciting primaries. Democrat primaries are kind of passé, except for Les's.
I remember that one not being too passé. Yeah.
Les, is it fair to say that your primary 10 years ago was the most expensive per vote primary in state history?
I have no idea.
It was certainly lively.
I know at least on my campaign side it wasn't, but you know, we each raised about $90,000 or so, as I recall.
That was Jane Envick.
Who I've become good friends with.
It was a highly competitive
race. I was too dumb to realize that I shouldn't have had any business running in that race. So,
well, you worked it and you won it. So, Les, what is your? Do you have races that you're particularly looking at or thinking about in terms of the balance of power in the coming legislature?
Well, you know, I'm certainly concerned. I mean, I don't buy this whole Republican thing that you have to split apart this bipartisan Senate. You know, nationally, we have partisanship that's crippling the country. We have a bipartisan Senate that works, and the Republican Party wants to split it apart. I mean, I think that offends me, frankly. It probably offends the Republicans and Democrats in that coalition who've been able to steer the middle of the road and not vote on the extreme. So that certainly was the goal of the redistricting plan, to split apart the bipartisan coalition. And I would tell voters, look, if you're happy with your incumbent, do not let them split apart one of the few examples we have of bipartisanship in this country. Fairbanks has turned more Democratic, not because the people's views have changed, but the Democrats who run in Fairbanks are very moderate Democrats. They're Democrats who believe in opening ANWR, as I do, who believe in trying to move forward a gas pipeline, who believe in strong job training, who believe in vocational education. These are sort of blue-collar Democrats that have all won up in Fairbanks and who are running again in Fairbanks, and I think they have a very good shot. That's why Fairbanks has become a majority Democratic legislator city, not because people care about party so much, but the Democrats who run up there are very moderate. They fit the Fairbanks demographic. And I feel that the Democrats up in Fairbanks have a good shot. You know, I don't think people want to see Ralph Seekins again. They saw what he did last time. And I think they want more ethical leadership than what they got when he was there. So, I feel good about the Democrats' chances up in Fairbanks because they sort of fit the demographic. They're all very moderate, and they're all sort of pro-ANWR, pro-oil development, pro-gas development, pro-mining Democrats who believe in trying to lower the cost of energy for their area. And I would say the same about, even though people toss labels around, I'd say the same thing about the Anchorage Democrats who are running for the Senate seats. They're all pro-ANWR Democrats. They're all pro energy Democrats. They've got certainly views about uplifting people who were born born without privilege. But I feel good about them. But it is true that the Republicans drew the districts to make those districts harder for these folks. But, Betty Davis is great. Hollis French is great. Bill Olkowski is great. They work hard. You don't know how hard they work unless you're inside the legislature and see them. Burning the midnight oil.
You raised a point there that I want to touch on right before we do our break. But I wonder how many voters will vote in terms of I want Republicans in charge of the Senate or I want Democrats in charge of the Senate. Do Alaskans often vote for the personality or the person that they identify with, the person they know in their community, more than they vote on, gee, I want my side to win the legislature? I want to get both of you to answer that. Do you want to take it first, Les?
Yeah, I knock on a lot of doors. I knock on thousands of doors every campaign. I will tell you the most common thing you hear from people is, I vote the person, not the party. Now, that said, certainly with redistricting, and both parties do it, and the law should be changed so we have a nonpartisan redistricting process, because this is pathetic what we have. Even though people vote the person, not the party, with an almost all Republican redistricting board, they still drew it so that most of the districts have majority registered Republicans. So they have tried. Their goal, of course, is to, again, and they said it publicly, is to split up the bipartisan majority. They don't like the bipartisanship. They want an all-Republican legislature. I think the state will be in very bad shape if we decide to put all the power in one party's hands. But the most common thing. I hate partisanship, and I vote the person, not the party. I get a lot of Republican votes in my district. I had a Republican yesterday call me up. I missed him when I dropped a flyer on his door. And he called me up, and he asked me to come over so he can give me a campaign donation.
Let me turn to Randy Riddick. I want to get Randy's response to that. You know, are voters voting because they want one side or the other to control the legislature, or do you think they focus more on the personality of the candidates?
I've heard for years that they focus on the personality. I think it's important for the voter to be able to relate to their candidate. That is important. Given that you have a choice of two acceptable candidates, most of the Alaskans clearly head in the direction of a Republican. When we look at our recent registration trends, this state was brought into the Union 50 plus years ago as a permanently Democrat state. In 1989, registration became equal for the two major parties. Both were in the neighborhood of 60,000 registered voters. Today, there are 132,000 plus Republicans and 71,000 Democrats. To think about the suggestion that 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats is a logical result of a state that has 85% more Republicans than Democrats defies all concepts of logic. When districts occur on the map that are equal population, you're going to have a lot of districts that have more Republicans because there's 61,500 more Republicans in the state than Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And how many non-party are
about 200,000.
All right. So that, and I'm going to, we're going to.
Can I answer that?
Just quick. We're going to go to a break here.
The vast majority of all voters are independents. They're right. Non-aligned. And those folks tend to lean Democratic. And that's how you end up having an equal Senate.
All right. Well, nonsense. Okay. We're going to move on. We have a good conversation here. It's Hometown Alaska. My guests are Randy Riddick, chairman of the Alaska Republican Party, Representative Les Guerra, a Democrat from downtown Anchorage, and bringing another guest in just a minute. And please stay with us and join. Now we've got some good emails here, and we'll be taking some calls as well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back on Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is candidate recruitment, candidate training, candidates, maybe you, deciding to run for the Alaska legislature. The filing deadline is on Friday, and there are 59 out of 60 seats open. And now I'd like to invite another guest, Paul Dauphin of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. They have an active program of training candidates so they can comply with the campaign finance disclosure laws. Thanks for being very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
So I noticed that you have quite a schedule of workshops lined up so that new candidates, potential candidates, I guess treasurers, can learn the rules. We've put a link on our website at alaskapublic.org for those who want to find out about the training so they can get to that link. What sort of things are you covering in the training? What are you trying to get across to people?
Well, we cover a number of things. Most importantly, and we repeat this over and over again, we want people who are running for office not to think of the Public Offices Commission, or APOC, as that person lurking around the corner. We want folks to be able to call us, to ask us questions, and to use the old phrase that's easier to ask forgiveness than permission, and that's really not the case with us. We want people to feel very free to call us and not ask us for permission, but ask us for advice. Am I doing the right thing if I report this way or that way, or questions of that type? And it's just so much easier for people. The other thing we try to cover is we go through the forms, and we go through the various reporting requirements, and there are a number of them. And we also go through the requirements, you know, things to look out for, cash contributions, how much you can accept from an individual, and things of that nature.
So these rules are quite complicated. I know you don't create the rules, you enforce the rules, but is it advisable for someone to hire a professional to do these filings and so forth, or can the typical person figure it out, or... ignorance of the law is not an excuse, right? I mean, if you mess it up, you could pay fines even if you claim that, well, I didn't understand the rules.
You're absolutely correct when you say that ignorance is not an excuse. But again, the way to avoid that is if you have a question, call the Public Offices Commission staff. And that's what we really want people to do. I would agree with you in that when you get into reading the statutes and the regulations, it does seem rather complex, but at the same time, if you sit down and look at the form that you're filling out and why you're reporting a particular thing, there is a certain logic to it. So if one takes your, you know, if you take your time and think it through and not get frustrated with it, it is somewhat complex, but it's not rocket science. It can be done, and oftentimes, people who are not professional accountants can do a very, very creditable job of filing their reports.
So the main thing that a candidate has to think about is keeping excellent records and filing reports on time of who donated the money and who they were and their occupation and so forth. And then there's these disclosure requirements related to advertising. So when they spend money, there are a variety of requirements for disclosing who paid for the ad and what their address is and that kind of thing. So I suppose there's a manual to learn all that, but I wonder if this is something that intimidates folks as they decide to get involved.
It may well be the case, and they shouldn't be intimidated by it. And what you're referring to when you speak to having people's names on the advertisement, it's actually the paid for by. And in some cases, if it's a different kind of advertising, the top three contributors. And these are all of these rules that the Public Offices Commission works with are really meant to aid in the transparency of the electoral process and the campaign process for the public. So I don't think it's anyone's intent to add more of a burden to any candidate or any sitting lawmaker. I don't think that's the intent, but it's to aid in the transparency for the general public.
Have there been changes in the way you do business because of the major court cases the Supreme Court has handed down, such as the Citizens United case we hear so much about, you know, with the super PACs and all that stuff that's happening on the national level? Is that irrelevant to our Alaska system, or are there changes or adjustments that you had to make?
There have been adjustments made, not so much in the way we do business, but in the way that we look at how things are done and in the way we advise people. Just in the past 3 weeks, we've had two advisory opinion requests regarding they dealt with the implications of Citizens United. And for people who may not know, an advisory opinion is something that is requested by an individual or a group, a candidate, what have you. And the Public Offices Commission staff does some research, provides a legal opinion, or provides an opinion on the matter to the requestor, and then it is voted on by the commission. And I think that's a distinction to make at this point. The staff does quite a bit of the writing and provides a good deal of information and advice, but in the end, it's the commission itself, the five members, who actually either approve or disapprove what staff has provided to people.
So does that mean there's somebody out there who's thinking, hey, I've got a great idea of something I'd like to do in terms of fundraising, because of Citizens United, let's see if APOC would approve of it. I mean, is that sort of when you talk about an advisory opinion, is that sort of why that would come about?
That is precisely what occurs, those type of questions.
I see.
I want to do this. This is the way I read the statute or the regulation, but I'm not 100% clear. Could you give me something somewhat formal? And the advisory opinion protects the individual or the group who's asked for it from a complaint until the commission either approves or disapproves.
I see. Now, of course, the purpose of all this is so that the public can find out more about the people running for office and who's backing them. We used to have a newspaper in this town that did a lot of coverage of this stuff. That doesn't really happen that much anymore. I suppose there are some websites that cover it, but if you are an informed voter, is there a place where you can go and look at the who's contributed to the candidates you're considering, and how do you go about doing that?
You can go to the Alaska Public Offices Commission website, and if you just put in APOC, APOC, you'd be able to get to that and do a web search. You'd be able to get to the website pretty quickly. Then on the website, there is a tab that says Search Reports. If you click on that, and then Web Reports, you can see all the current year reports. That is for all the candidates for state offices who have filed their public official financial disclosure forms. You can see the year start campaign forms, and on those forms, who has contributed and what expenditures any candidate has made. There's a great deal of other information about groups and who supported groups and who groups are supporting and things of that nature as well.
And does that go up pretty much real time as to when it comes in? Or
with electronic reporting, those who file electronically, as soon as they certify their report, and this is for state candidates, it's immediately available.
All right. Well, great. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your program that folks that I should have asked?
Well, I would encourage people who are not running for office but are interested in the process to visit the website, look at the reports, that it's their information. This is, you think often of people with a great deal of information. They're the old librarian who keep in the corner and shush everybody in the room. We want people to go in and look at the information. It is the public's information. So we want them to go look at it. Ask questions. That's what we're here for, both for candidates, sitting legislators, and just the general public. If they don't understand something, we want people to ask us. That's really what we're looking to become, is much more of an educational organization for candidates and the general public. And hopefully the more education we do, the fewer complaints and fines and other unpleasantness that has to be dealt with. If we educate everybody up front, fewer mistakes can be made.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Paul DeFan from the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And my guests in studio are Randy Rudrick, Rudrick, the chairman of the Alaska Republican Party, and Representative Les Guerra was on the phone with us. He's a Democrat representing downtown Anchorage. And if you want to get on the show, the number here is 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. We have another email. Robert asks, and I think this is a question for you, Chairman Rudrick. How do you decide who gets money from the party? Obviously, if I'm a new candidate, maybe I don't know much about fundraising or have a great network, but you personally are a legendary fundraiser and the party has money. How do you deal that out to candidates, and how does that come about?
Well, generally, there's no funds distributed before the end of the primary cycle. After the primary, a targeting committee gets together and makes a decision as to what races to fund. And of course, at this time, the funding is limited by the party to $10,000 in a House race or $15,000 in a Senate race. And we have a large collection of auxiliaries, like there's about 10 Republican women's groups around the state. So the first thing that we do is actually allow those organizations to make contributions to whoever they want to make contributions. Then the districts and party organizations would make contributions. And typically, there is a complete second round of that process. So it is a very complex process, which will eventually get to a number of our candidates who are new candidates running will wind up with $10,000 or $15,000 in direct support from party organizations.
And that, you know, a typical House race might be a $50,000 race or $100,000 race in Anchorage. Out in other areas of the state, much less, I guess.
Yeah, less than $50,000 in many parts of the state. And so a $10,000 contribution is substantial, not overwhelming by any means. And in a Senate race, which obviously is substantially more expensive, the $15,000 limit is generally a smaller amount of the total budget.
Mm-hmm. Representative Guerra, is the Democratic Party able to do the same kind of funding support, and is that a significant factor for Democratic candidates?
Yeah, it is. We're set up a little bit different. The Senate gets their money to candidates through what's called the Senate Democratic Campaign Committee. It's part of the party, and the House gets it through the House Democratic Campaign Committee. And we try and match the Republicans dollar for dollar. We've been successful in the past. It takes more work because our donors tend to be smaller donors. We don't tend to get as many oil company executive donations as the Republican Party does, oil company PAC donations. But, you know, we gather smaller donations in bigger numbers. And, you know, I am concerned about this year. It's the first, second election under Citizens United. And even though the candidates may have equal amounts of money, I think then those independent expenditures, the unlimited corporate donations to support a candidate or oppose a candidate or union contributions, I think there's going to be a flood of oil company money going into those independent expenditures because they want Governor Parnell's $2 billion tax reduction. And they lobbied for it very heavy during session. So what you'll see is you'll see candidate A and candidate B raise similar amounts of money. I am concerned that sort of corporate independent expenditures are going to go towards negative ads and make it much harder for Democratic candidates who are just going to have to work a lot harder to offset that kind of stuff.
But we're
seeing that nationally. Most of the independent expenditure money under Citizens United is going to Republicans.
And Randy Rudrick, do you think the Senate races are going to be all about the fact that the Senate blocked the governor's oil tax change? I mean,
one of the big issues was all of the blocking that Senator French did that upset all the social conservatives. So we will have all kinds of folks coming into play as individuals trying to correct those problems. The attack from the Democrat House rep I found absolutely baseless. The number of contributions from oil company executives is incidental compared to the contributions from the public sector unions that want to grow government, which Les supports totally, for the record.
Please.
And when we look at the third-party expenditures, we have seen huge union expenditures against Republicans in the 8 election cycle and in the 10 election cycle. And we will probably see larger ones in the 12 cycle. We're not Wisconsin, but we're not immune from the same type of union attempt to buy legislators.
I'm sure both of you gentlemen have strong opinions about how these campaigns are funded and who's funding on each side. And I don't really want to get sidetracked into that because I know we could debate that for a whole hour.
Or
for a whole day. But I think I wanted to get back more into the way folks get involved in the process. And money is one way. Another is sort of assistance for training folks, for supporting them in their run. The Democrats had in the past some stuff they did with joint office space and help train candidates with just sort of support and like how you do it and that kind of thing. Is that still going on, Representative Guerra? And how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, volunteer help is crucial. That offsets money. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, go volunteer for somebody you believe in. It'll make a big difference. Volunteers often equal thousands of dollars worth of money in terms of what you can get done. The Democrats do have a training on sort of the how do you run a campaign thing, but the Republicans do too. Frankly, it's because nobody knows how to run a campaign before they've done it. So you need some advice on what you're supposed to do. At least in ours, I suppose it's true. I would assume it's true in the Republicans. Nobody tells you what to run on, what your issues are, but they tell you, what the mechanics are. Do you knock on doors? How do you raise money? How does somebody who's never run before raise money? Because it's sort of a necessary evil as part of the current process. And so, yeah, we have a campaign training, and then we share office space, or we try to share office space, so you have a synergy where people get to sort of bounce ideas off each other. We do that. I don't know if the Republicans do, but we do that.
Do you have that kind of training, Randy?
Well, strangely enough, I do need to agree with Les on one point. Volunteers are extremely important, whether they're college Republicans, young Republicans, or any other person who wants to be involved, Republican or not. Getting involved in a campaign, there's always more things to do than a campaign can get done. So a couple of folks working a few hours a day, a few hours a week, are always necessary and helpful. You can contact the Republican Party office or one of your candidates in your part of town and find an opportunity to become involved. You can go out and walk with the candidate. You can help the candidate with signs. You can help the candidate with organizing events. You can help the candidate raise funds if that's what your passion is. There are many activities that you can do. Schools. We've already had several schools for candidates. We had one in the day before our state convention. There were quite a few people from around the state here with a set of instructors, which included folks from APOC coming over to comment also to make sure that you do things right the first time. And so as everybody needs training, everybody needs guidance. Some schools are aimed mostly at candidates, others at volunteers. They tend to produce in the total matrix the right training resources for people to be on the ground assisting in winning elections.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of how much work it takes to run, there's advice that, I ran for the Assembly many years ago, huge amount of door-to-door, and really to cover a district, hopefully it completely, ideally some candidates get through the whole district twice. You're essentially, working at that from maybe 4:30 until, 8:30 at night every weekday and all day every weekend. And it seems like it would be pretty darn hard. I mean, when I did it, I was between jobs. So I quit my job and ran because I knew it was going to take a huge amount of work. And I guess I'll ask you first, Les, since you have run, although it's been a while. What level of effort? You say you got to be committed, you got to work really hard. What level of effort is needed to really be serious as a candidate? Do you need to quit your job? Do you need to be putting in 40, 50, 60 hours a week in running? What do you think?
Well, it depends on how tough your campaign is. If your district is made for you, if you're a Republican or a Democrat and you've got a totally Republican or Democratic district, you could probably skate by not doing a lot of work.
That's not going to be the new person, though, right?
What's that?
That's not going to be the new person who's never run before. That would be the incumbent. It would be in that position.
Honestly, if you've got a totally Republican district, 5,000 registered Republicans, 1,000 registered Democrats in a very conservative district, it's going to be very hard for you to lose that race. You're going to have to pull a rabbit out of a hat and step on it by accident, you know. But for most races, it's a big undertaking. You got to knock on doors, and you know, when I knock on doors, I do it. I've done it 7 days a week in the past, you know, in this election, regardless of I do have an opponent, but regardless of whether I had one, I've got now I have all of downtown. I have some new areas. I want to make sure I meet everybody. So that takes time. You've got 17,800 people in each district, and you burn some shoe leather if you take it seriously. If you really want to hear from people, that's for sure. And I do agree with Randy. You know, call your favorite candidate, call your party if you want to volunteer. You know, that's the second best way to run if you don't want to run yourself. Mm-hmm. Is to be a volunteer.
Well, let me ask this question. I'll start with Randy. I mean, you think about how much work it is to run, the unpleasantness of potentially being attacked, having to get on the phone, dial for dollars, and then spend several months of your year, should you win, in Juneau. Is it too darn tough, you know, to have a citizen legislature? You know, who wants that kind of aggravation, right? You'd have to really, really be committed.
Many people raise that point. I think that is maybe the positive piece. You do wind up with people who really want to do it. And is to kind of counter Les's observation slightly, if the district is overwhelmingly Republican or Democrat, you may have to work very, very hard, as he did in 2002, because you may have another person
in
from
the primary,
your party.
Right.
So your primary may be tougher than your general election campaign and will require all that effort that you don't have to put out if you're in a highly competitive seat, because the folks in Eagle River have three people running for a House seat, and they are going to be very, very busy between now and the end of August to have the privilege of being the Republican nominee for the general election.
It seems like there are still people who are willing to put their names forward in any event.
Oh, yeah.
And in an open seat, sometimes it's the primary that's the election.
That is the case in many places in the state for mm-hmm. both parties.
Yeah. So I just have a few seconds left, Representative Guerra. I mean, is it gotten a bit too tough for newcomer, or is that a good thing, like Randy's saying?
Now, if you want to run for office, you should run for office. If you have the fire in your belly to, you know, help change the state in a direction that you think is a good direction, run for office.
Good ending point.
Or go volunteer for somebody you like. It's not too hard to do. You know, the money obstacles are ones that you can overcome.
Okay, thanks so much. I want to really thank each of my guests, Randy Reedrick, Chairman of the Alaska Republican Party, Representative Les Guerra, Democrat from downtown Anchorage, Paul Dufin, I'm sure I mispronounced his name, Dufinis, Alaska Public Offices Commission. Next week on Hometown Alaska, Kathleen McCoy will be talking about climbing Denali. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can hear the whole show later on. You can also join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.